Welcome, everyone, to episode 10 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. Gibby is in the studio. What's going on?
That's a good day, man.
It's always a good day when we're recording.
I like being in the studio right now. It's very cold outside.
Yeah, it's, what, 10 degrees where we are?
Something like that. Maybe a little chillier.
Yeah, it's very cold. So a couple of shout-outs. Got to give a shout-out to Cassie Pearson. She did a great Scott Peterson meme. And Gibby, everybody knows how much we love memes.
I love those memes.
Yeah.
I do. And she did a great job.
We've got to keep them coming. We love them. We didn't even know what a meme was, I don't think, before we started this podcast. And now we're infatuated with memes.
Yeah, Jordan got us rolling on them.
Yep. Jordan started this whole meme craze for us. Then a very special shout out to Sarah. Sarah's our newest Patreon supporter. And I can't thank you enough, Sarah, for deciding to financially support the show. It really makes a big difference. So you too can help support the show for as little as $2 a month by going to our Patreon page. You'll find the Patreon link and all of our contact information on our website at truecrimeallthetime.com. If you love the show, please remember to rate and review us on iTunes. Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500.
So we have a few big announcements to make. The first is that the Wednesday after this episode airs, we will be releasing our first listener co-hosted episode. It will basically be very similar to our regular episodes, but we'll have a TCAT listener on with us who is from the area and familiar with the case, and they should be able to add some great information to the episode. I have four or five other people that have expressed interest in doing this. If you're out there listening and you have a lesser-known case that you're familiar with or that occurred in your area and you think you'd like to come on with us and be part of this new listener co-hosted episode segment, definitely reach out to us. I don't know exactly how often we'll do this. A lot of it will depend on, you know, what kind of demand we have. But, you know, we want to get this first one out there and see what people think of it. So the second announcement is pretty big. And it's that Gibby and I are starting a new podcast. The podcast shares the name True Crime All the Time. But this one is Unsolved. So basically it's the same logo where it just has a stamp on it that says Unsolved that kind of runs through the clock. And what we did is we made the decision that we're going to stick with solved cases on the regular TCAT show that we've been doing. And then we're just going to start a new TCAT Unsolved that looks strictly at unsolved cases. So if all goes according to plan, the first episode will drop on Sunday, the 22nd. The show should be out on iTunes sometime this week for you to subscribe to. But we will definitely make the announcement again on next week's True Crime All the Time. Like I said, it'll have the same logo. It'll just have an unsolved stamp running through it. So for all of you out there on social media, you know, that keep saying you wish we would put out more episodes, hopefully this will help satisfy that true crime craving. I know we're really excited about it. It's something we've talked about for a little while, and we hope you like it. And then the last announcement is that we should be offering up some True Crime All the Time merchandise for sale in the near future. So definitely be on the lookout for that announcement on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm sure we'll make an announcement on the podcast episode right before we're ready to unveil. But a lot of people have been asking for merchandise, and we're going to get some.
Nothing better than to listen to your True Crime All the Time while you're sipping a cup of coffee out of your True Crime All the Time mug.
You know what I found? I'm going to give a top. This is top secret. But what I found was what they call a rescue whistle for people to put on their keychain.
Well, the one high-pitched noise
thing?
Yeah,
if they run into any problems, and it's going to say True Crime All the Time. So, I mean, what goes better with you just listened to a scary episode of True Crime All the Time.
Yeah.
You've got to go out. It's dark at night. You got your rescue whistle attached to your key ring. That's a no-brainer right there.
Right there.
All right, Gibby, are you ready to get into this bizarre true crime story?
I am. It's definitely a little different.
It's different for us in a couple of ways. You know, number one, it's a case of workplace violence, and we haven't done one of those. There's a lot of them out there, and I'm sure this won't be the last one that we do. It is a little different for us. So today we are talking about the case of Alton Nolan, who in 2014 would commit a very brutal homicidal rampage at the place that he worked. You know, strangely, and Gibby, you and I talked about this before we went on air, this is the second story. We're 10 episodes in, and this is the second story that we're doing on a man named Alton. And to me, that's not a name that I hear a lot.
No, it's a pretty rare name.
Yeah, kind of interesting factoid, I guess.
Yeah, the fact that you get, you know, two murderers with that name is pretty bizarre.
Yeah. So a little bit about Alton Nolan. He was born in 1984, and he grew up in a very rough neighborhood of Idabel, Oklahoma. Gibby, I don't know if you looked at anything, but I did a little bit of research on Idabel because I'd never heard of it. I'm not overly familiar with Oklahoma, so I wanted to do a little bit of research on it. But, you know, it's a small town, looks like maybe 7,000 to 10,000 people.
Haven't been there. Been through Oklahoma.
One place you have not been.
I've been in Oklahoma, but, you know, Oklahoma City. But, never heard of the place.
Yeah, I hadn't either. It's located in the southeast corner of the state. One thing that I did read about Idabel was that it had some rough parts to it.
Okay.
And Alton Nolan would grow up in this kind of rough part of Idabel, that apparently there was a lot of crime and there were a lot of murders that took place.
So another person that grew up in a tough area, tough neighborhood, probably a tough childhood, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I could not find a lot about his childhood, which we found in a lot of cases. We've been able to detail out people's childhoods much better in some of our other cases. But, you know, some of the things that I did find were that, you know, so as I said, this is a very, very small town, 7,000 to 10,000 people.
Right.
And it had a lot of murders. So that's pretty strange for such a low population. And childhood friends later on after the incident that we're going to talk about, they would say that Alton was filled with anger and resentment and that he had a temper and a tendency towards violence from a very early age.
And that tends to come from the way you're raised.
Upbringing usually has
something in your early life causes that.
Right.
I think.
I mean, you're talking nature versus nurture there. And
right.
We don't know exactly what it was, but obviously there was something in him that caused him to be filled with a lot of anger and resentment. But a very interesting fact about
this very small town of Idabel was that two of Alton's childhood friends would also turn out to be murderers.
Really?
Yeah. I found it very strange. So he had a friend that was found guilty. So these are childhood friends that are later turn out to be murderers. He had one friend that was found guilty of murder in 2013, having killed his boss at a Sonic restaurant.
So another workplace violence?
Yeah. And that's strange.
Right.
So a little connection there. Apparently, he shot her multiple times, starting with a point-blank shot to the back of her head. He stole the day's deposits for the Sonic restaurant that she had on her. That's the first friend.
Right.
So this friend was, he ultimately pled guilty and was sentenced to life. And I assume he's still.
For $9,000 and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the craziness of that, but.
Makes a lot of sense.
So the second friend, childhood friend that he had, murdered a woman in her bathtub. And apparently he and another person, accomplice, stabbed this woman multiple times and killed her. I just found it very strange that, you know, these are childhood friends of his. They grew up in the same neighborhood, and apparently they grew up in the same situation.
So clearly this was a pretty rough neck of the woods, I'm guessing.
By all indications.
I don't know the area, so I don't know if you call it projects. I don't know if you call it just, you know, the neighborhood. But for three people that knew each other that ended up committing these crimes like that.
Well, that would be weird. To me, that would be weird in a big town. But in a town the size of 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, whatever it is, to have right. three childhood friends, that yeah, there's something there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any childhood friends that have done anything like that, right? I mean, that we know of. But I do know and have, you know, I've known people either because I worked with them or lived across the street or in the same neighborhood with them that committed murder.
Right.
Right. You know, we haven't got into those. We've kind of dusted over a few of them, but.
Right. But these weren't your childhood friends
yeah. that, you know, I used to play football with or anything like that.
So let's start off, you know, as we like to do playing clips. Let's start off with the 911 call, and then we'll talk about what we hear.
Good morning, 911. Where's your emergency?
Bond Foods, Moore, Oklahoma, 216 Northeast 20th Street. We have,
what's going on there?
We have someone attacking someone in the building. I was just informed I'm in the...
Okay, where are they at?
Inside. Are they in the office? They're in the office. Front office of the building. Okay. Yeah, we can hear a lot of screaming. We're actually in a different office, but someone just came here yelling.
315. Okay, do you know where they're at in the building?
In the front of the building. There's our main entrance.
Okay, do you know where he is at in the plant?
We know that he's loose. He has stabbed someone.
Yeah, we've got medical en route to them.
Okay.
Is anybody with him, or do you know?
Hold on,
we're respond on lacerations. Bond 216. Go ahead, sir. 216 Northeast 12.
I'm going to put you on speakerphone 1 second, okay?
Stand by on a map page 1608. Timeout.
Okay, so we don't know where the person went. He went through our front office, went to the shipping office, okay. Stabbed a woman in our customer service department.
Okay, did he know her? Do you know, is that who he was arguing with? Is she an employee?
She is an employee, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Lock that door.
Yeah, go ahead and lock everybody in there if you can.
Yeah, we're trying. Okay. Can you hear this in the background?
Is that him? He's back?
Yeah, it sounds like he's running around out here.
Okay.
And that's a gunshot.
Got gunshot.
Sure.
Units responding to the bond because if I do not have gunshot. Okay, do you know where he's at now?
He's in the hallway outside of the center of the building.
Maybe in the hallway in the center of the building.
We can hear the 911 call, and we hear them talking about Alton Nolan going through the Vaughn Foods.
Right.
and ultimately kind of ending up with gunshots. So let's talk a little bit about what happened in, I mean, this, this didn't take very long.
No, it happened fairly fast.
Right. Alton Nolan enters the Von Foods and he immediately encounters a 54-year-old Colleen Hufford.
Right.
In the, I think some type of administrative office. What I got from the research, Gibby, and correct me as we go, but he encountered her like from behind, like came up on her from behind.
Right.
And completely severed her head with a knife, you know, like probably reaching around.
Yeah, I think he, he had a paring knife and he reached around and slit the neck and then continued to sever the head.
We're going to talk about what kind of story this became, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, this was not to be too graphic, but it was a decapitation, right? It was a beheading, if you want to call it that.
Right.
So a little bit about Colleen. She was from Moore, Oklahoma. She was born in Germany, probably on an Air Force base. It doesn't say that, but she had lived in Montana and was raised in Montana. She married her husband in Montana, and then they settled in Moore, Oklahoma. They had a daughter. Colleen was an avid hockey fan. I guess what I read is, above all, she just had a real joy of life, and she was especially close with her family, and most of all, her granddaughter. So we, you know, again, we try to talk about the victims as much as we can, because we don't want to make all of these podcasts just about the person that perpetrates the criminal act. So he's decapitated Colleen Hufford.
Mm-hmm.
And from there he runs into another employee.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you want to step back a little bit, talk about how it brewed up to this point?
Yeah, we definitely can.
You know,
there was a couple of things, and I've got it a little farther down in my notes.
Right.
But we can do it now, because there was different reasons that led up to this altercation, or it's not an altercation, it's a rampage.
Right.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. Originally, the police would put out a statement that said that Nolan had just been terminated from the Vaughn Foods because he worked there. So this is September 2014. And right after this happens, they put out a statement saying he'd been terminated. But later on, they would correct that from the research that I did and say that he had been suspended. So you've got that. That's one factor. And then I think the factor that you're probably referring to the most is his issues with Tracy Johnson.
Yeah. Basically the reason he got suspended. So what do we know? We know that he is employed there. He's supposed to be working, and Tracy is been on the job for 3 or 4 days, right? She just was released from prison. She did some, and it's unrelated, but you know, it's a good point to bring out. You know, she just came out of prison from some check fraud issues, and she served some time for that. This is her first job, and this is her fourth day into it, and she's working on the assembly line, and she sees Alton, you know, he's there, but he's goofing off, he's not working, and she's not afraid to say something, and she says, you know, you need to do your job, get busy, not just standing around and goofing off. She basically tells him, you know, you're lazy. Well, of course, he doesn't like that. And so he, you know, he makes some comments and makes some racial comments towards her. Basically, you know, says something like, you know, I don't like white people and a few other comments. So, you know.
That's what leads to her filing the complaint.
She goes to HR, files that complaint. Right. Somebody else also files a complaint. So then they pull him in to get his story. And at that point, you know, he gives his story as well. And at that point, they decide to put him on suspension. So he's told to leave.
Because one thing we haven't talked about. So Alton Coleman, there you go. I knew I was going to say Alton Coleman.
See, you thought it was going to be me.
I know. I did think it was going to be you. Alton Nolan was Muslim.
He was.
And there was a lot of information that he had been trying to convert some of his fellow employees. And I don't know if that also led to the suspension, or was a contributing factor.
I think it was a combination that he was making religious comments and also making racial comments.
Right.
So it was a combination of.
And we're going to talk a lot more about the fact that he's Muslim and how that plays into the story, because it becomes a huge
after fact. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he leaves, goes home, and he returns within 15 minutes. So he's not gone very long, right?
No, and I have that he brings back a large bladed knife. You said paring knife.
Yeah.
When I think paring knife, that's something that I use, the little thing to cut up an apple.
Right. But that's, you know, everything that I read, he went home and got a paring knife. So I don't know what his paring knife looked like.
Right. What I have is a large bladed knife that you'd use to cut up, like, heads of lettuce.
Right. So a chef's knife, a chopping knife, or whatever they call that.
I don't know. I think it would, not that you couldn't do it, but a paring knife would have maybe be a little tough to.
Right.
I mean, you could do that with anything that's sharp enough, I guess.
But, you know, there's no pictures of the evidence out there, so there's no way for us to actually see the size of the
knife. Yeah, we're just going by.
But we're just going off of the different media stories released.
But I think the key is that, you know, he's pissed off.
Yeah.
He's just been suspended. He goes home, gets a knife, because we know that. And at this point, he returns to Von Foods for revenge.
Right.
I think that's pretty well known.
And he's got a history of, like you said, right? He's got a history of rage.
Right.
According to his friends, right? You know, and where he grew up. And then,
so
and I don't know when we're going to dive into it, but he's got a history.
And I think let's finish with the actual, what happens at Von Foods. And then we're going to talk about his history and some of the other things, but because he's already gone back. We already talked about Colleen Hufford, and it was important that you took that detour because the next person that he encounters is Tracy Johnson.
Right.
And that's the reason why I know that's the reason why you wanted to take that detour, because it sets it up. My understanding is that he had three targets. The first one was Tracy Johnson. That's the individual that had, in his eyes, probably gotten him suspended. The other two, I couldn't find their names, and maybe you have them, but I didn't have them. But it's irrelevant because they were not injured. He never got far enough to get to them,
right,
in the plant.
I think it was he wanted to go after the two individuals that made the complaint, and then the HR person.
So, and that would make sense because in his mind, if it's revenge and it's all about this suspension, it's the people that caused it and it's the people that carried it out. But, you know, let's go back to Colleen Hufford, because she wasn't a part of any of it.
No, she was just in the, you know, the old saying, in the
wrong place at the wrong time. She just happened to be the first person that he encountered, and because of that, unfortunately, she lost her life.
Right. And so the interesting part is, so, you know, he does what he did to her. He comes up behind from her, slits the throat, cuts the head off, mm-hmm. right? However that motion happened. She put up a struggle. I mean, she kicked over some chairs in the office.
I can't imagine that anybody wouldn't.
Right.
That scenario.
And you could tell in the room she was in, you could tell there was a little bit of struggle. So meanwhile, you know, Tracy, she's back in the locker room changing clothes, end of her shift, and she can hear the screaming. She says that she doesn't realize, she thinks it was just people messing around. She didn't know it was something severe. So she hears that, and then she comes out and she walks into that office, and she sees the first victim laying there, but you can't tell that the head's been severed, right? You just see a lot of blood.
I imagine it had to have been a lot of blood.
So it like it would anybody, it freaked her out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of commotion going on. She says at that point, she went back to the locker room to retrieve something, and then she wanted to go back and sit with the victim till help arrived. On her way to returning back to that office, that's when she came face to face with Alton, and at that point, that's when, you know, you got more details, but I believe that's the point when he rushes to her, and she basically says that he's 5 feet away, but once he makes his move, it's like within a second and a half, 2 seconds, he's on her, and she freezes because she just doesn't know how to react to it. And within that time, he takes the knife to her right side of her neck.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, he's trying to do the same thing, and he tries to, he's millimeters away from hitting the major artery, right? And at that point, that's when the other coworker slash part-time sheriff takes his shot.
Yeah, so he slashed Tracy up.
Yeah.
He wanted to do the same thing to her that he had just done to Colleen. But as you said, and it was actually the company's CEO, Mark Vaughn, so Von Foods.
Von Foods, yeah.
He's obviously family, but he happened to be a reserve deputy with the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Department. And for whatever reason, he had a rifle. I don't know if he kept it for protection in the office. but he shot Nolan with the rifle, and that's what stopped the attack. And you can hear that on the 911 because there's some loud pops and somebody says, those are gunshots. You know, getting back to Tracy and I guess Alton Nolan, for that matter, they were hospitalized, but ultimately they both survived.
Yeah, I think that's kind of strange. You know, I think for both of them, they were in the same hospital. I mean, small town. I have a town of Moore, right?
Yeah, Moore, Oklahoma.
Moore, Oklahoma. So I'm guessing it's probably doesn't have a lot of hospitals. This is probably the trauma one center that they have in the area.
You know, I don't know. We're going to get in trouble now because
somebody will let us know.
Every time we talk about towns, people say we're ignorant because we don't know how big they are. And
you know, most towns have their trauma one centers that people that they would send this type of medical emergency to. And Tracy makes the comment that she was uneasy knowing that the person that tried to kill her was just, you know, a few doors down.
Wouldn't you be?
Absolutely, I would be.
There's no doubt.
So
Tracy does make a recovery, and we actually have a clip of her. So let's listen to that.
He started slicing my neck and got a hold of my face and got a hold of my right index finger and wouldn't stop. And I'm screaming for help and didn't think anybody was going to come around. He got a millimeter away from my jugular cord. And to me, it would happen quickly, but it seemed to last forever.
So that's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only imagine what it must have been like for her. And you mentioned kind of freezing and to see what she saw and the amount of blood and then to see this man now coming after her. I think a lot of people not trained in that type of response would do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, and I have a feeling she can be tough or stand her ground, you know, cause she wasn't afraid to speak her mind to him about him not doing his job and for him to quit being lazy.
Which we all want to do.
Yeah. Well,
from time to time.
Right. So she didn't have that problem speaking up. And I don't know if that's because she was new on the job and she didn't want to be worried about losing her job because someone wasn't doing their share or because, you know, like I said, she did do a small stint in prison, you know, and maybe that toughened her up a little bit. And she felt that, you know, she wasn't going to let anybody, you know, railroad her.
And maybe it's what saved her life, too.
It might have. So
maybe she was tough. And even though she froze for a while, she didn't let him. Now, also, you got to give credit to Mark Vaughn because without him,
absolutely.
She probably does not survive.
Yeah, I don't believe she would be here today, and I think she understands that too.
And really, if you think about it, not just her. If Mark Vaughn doesn't have this rifle and is able to put Alton Nolan down, I mean, we're probably talking about
three or four other people.
Many more people.
Right.
So it was a good guy with a gun that stopped a bad guy,
right,
which is also a podcast that may be coming out soon. Just to throw that out there.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think Tracy today, I mean, she still feels the blame for some of this because she's the one that made the initial complaint against him. And she feels that, you know, this is what caused his rage. And so I think she feels, you know, bad. Because what happened to...
And I think that's natural, but not warranted, right? I mean, she didn't... Her actions led to this, but they shouldn't have.
Right.
Right? She didn't bring this on.
It wasn't her fault.
Solely on the shoulders of Alton Nolan and his decision-making. So now I think, Gibby, we get to the criminal record. Because you kind of touched on it a little bit, and it's important. About Alton Nolan because he did have a criminal record. He was convicted on drug charges, and I know you've got some good notes on the years and stuff, but what was that, 2000?
Well, yeah.
Probably multiple
ones. I mean, the first thing was, you know, he was arrested in 2006 for having cocaine and the intent to distribute it. So that's his first thing on his record, and that's a pretty big... I mean, cocaine and trying to distribute it?
Well, yeah, when you get intent to distribute, that's usually pretty serious.
And then he gets arrested again in 2009 for possession of marijuana, which is really today not as big as it used to be. But he also
it's legal in
most
a lot of places.
So many states have it legal. So, but he gets arrested for possession of marijuana and also driving with a suspension license. But then in 2010, that's the big one.
This is the big one, and this is the one I really want to talk about because. There's some fascinating aspects to this one.
He has a traffic stop. He decides that, and I get you have more information on this one, but it's a female officer, right?
Yes. It is a female officer that stops him. And, you know, I don't have the specifics on it, but the end result is that he overpowers her, beats her up, or he's charged with battery.
Yeah, it's battery and assault.
This altercation with the police officer. We're going to hear from this police officer a little bit, but at this point she could have shot him and she didn't because he kind of beat her up and fled.
Well, it was a 12-hour manhunt.
Yeah. And then ensues this 12-hour manhunt. He's ultimately captured. But he escapes detention in 2011, but he ultimately serves 2 years of a 6-year sentence and he's released in 2013. But I want to go back to this 2010 incident because it is really interesting. And I've got a clip of the police officer talking about her interaction with Nolan.
It's not something that any law enforcement officer wants to do, but at the time when we struggled, there was a brief flash of time that I would have actually had the opportunity to do that and would have been within my rights to do that. And of course, looking back, if there was any way I could have known that and could have prevented the tragedies that happened 2 days ago, I definitely would have done that. Well, I had planned to take the day off, so I was in the yard, in the garden, and Channel 4 called me, and our local Channel 4 here in town, and they called me and told me what was going on, and they said, you know, this is the same guy. We're looking at OSCN.net, and we're looking and seeing that this guy is the same one that assaulted a trooper back in October of 2010 out by the town of Langston, and we had a big manhunt for him. And I said, that was me. I was the trooper that he assaulted. And as soon as I realized what was going on and they said that he had possibly beheaded somebody, I mean, I got goosebumps all over my body. So all I could do was just thank God that he didn't kill me when he had the chance to do so. And then, of course, later, as I began to think about it, then I was just overcome with guilt that I didn't take the opportunity to kill him when I had the chance to do so.
So, Gibby, I mean, you can really hear in her voice that you can hear the struggle with the fact that she possibly could have killed this man back in 2010 when he assaulted her. That would have ultimately meant that the killing that happened in 2014 would not have occurred. She says she was well within her rights and she would have been because, you know, you assault a police officer and you know, most of the time you're going to get shot, but she didn't for whatever reason. Obviously, there was no way for her to know that these events were going to unfold 4 years later. And I feel bad for her because you can tell that she's really carrying around a lot of guilt about this. And again, kind of like we talked about Tracy Johnson, it's probably hard not to feel some guilt in these situations. But ultimately, the decision-making of Alton Nolan is what led to the incident in 2014. All these things that happened before, although both the policewoman and Tracy Johnson may feel some guilt about it.
Right.
They shouldn't.
No, he was just a bad individual. Yeah. Right. I mean, like you said, he did his time. He was also ordered to do anger management classes, you know, upon his release. And I don't know if he completed those. Clearly, he didn't learn anything from them.
If he did complete them, they didn't help.
And then we know that, you know, the previous job before working at Vaughn, he also was released from that job for having personnel issues. Don't really know the details in that. Clearly, he had a track record of issues.
So here's a question for you. How's he getting all these jobs with this string, this record that he's got?
Well, I'm wondering, because he had a criminal history, and we know...
Pretty extensive. I mean, this isn't like I had a bunch of parking tickets and I had a marijuana charge. Right. I mean, he had a pretty...
Yeah, I mean, he was wanted for assaulting a police officer.
Yeah, that's a pretty extensive record.
And then we also know, and I'm not trying to, I keep bringing it up, but I don't mean to bring it up in that way, but Tracy did have a slight, criminal history. So maybe Vaughn Foods.
Just didn't do a background check.
Right.
And maybe
Or maybe they were trying to do community service by hiring
people coming
out of jail to give them a fresh start, or maybe in that area for the wages that they paid, maybe that was the type of workers that they received. I don't know. I mean, who knows, right?
Yeah.
We're not from the area. We don't know.
We're going to get a lot of emails about
that. Well, I just think maybe it's more of a work release type of a, maybe they fresh start type of place.
I'm going with the fact that they probably didn't do
background checks.
Like a background
back then?
Check. Yeah. And we're only talking about 2.5 years ago.
It's hard to get a job today without most places without some form of background check.
But maybe, it's a smaller outfit. They're not publicly traded probably. So they're not required to do.
Yeah, it's a family business, right?
Family business. They're probably not required to do a background check. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
So Gibby, now we're in the aftermath stage of this incident, and it's the incident was bad. There's no way around that.
Terrible.
What Alton Nolan did was just horrible. He ruined people's lives. I mean, he killed a woman, and then he ruined Tracy's life was probably, I don't want to call it ruined, but it was, I'm sure she was scarred for life. And
oh,
and even people that weren't hurt, I imagine they had, it affected them.
Well, Tracy
emotionally.
Tracy's even said that, she attempted to try to go back to work, but she basically went to work. When she returned, she walked in and basically ran out and went home and decided to never return again. And I get that. I don't know, to go through what she went through, to see what she saw. I don't know how you could ever go back to that
place. I think it'd be tough to go back.
Yeah. Yeah, and clearly, I mean, she couldn't thank the CEO of the Mark Vaughn. She was absolutely so thankful for what he did. But even knowing that he's there, she still just couldn't go there anymore after going through what she went through. So I get that.
I don't blame her one
bit. And I don't know how you really return to any workplace after going through that. And I don't know if she has or not since then. I think it would be difficult to ever feel safe anywhere for that.
In the aftermath, what became the biggest issue of this case was Nolan's religion.
Well, sure, right? You had the religion part because he did get in trouble at work for talking about, you know, trying to convert people to become Muslims.
Right.
But at the same time, he was also saying he doesn't like white people. Right. So you got the race aspect to it as well.
Right. And there's one thing that, and I saved this to the end, towards the end of the podcast, but it really happened several months before the incident. And that's that he had actually, Alton had changed his name on Facebook to Yakim Yisrael. So he had adopted a Muslim name, which there's nothing wrong with. People do that all the time.
Sure.
In the Muslim religion.
But I think it's, and I know you're going to cover it, and I think has to do with a lot of the Facebook posts, social media posts that he starts putting out there, right? I mean, he's slowly dropping these different posts of more of the Islamic, anti-American, he's showing pictures of beheadings. He's showing the 9/11 pictures
He's got the Twin Towers burning on 9/11.
Yeah, and praising the action of that.
He's got a picture of himself at a mosque in Oklahoma City.
Right.
And apparently he's making a hand sign of an ISIS fighter. So right. These are all posts from his Facebook page.
Yeah, I mean, you said Osama bin Laden on one of them.
Right. Other ISIS commanders. And on these, when he's posting these pictures, he's also making comments that are saying, like, some of my Muslim brothers. Well, these are some of the people that hate America the most. When you're talking about Osama bin Laden and his and other ISIS commanders, and he's saying, you know, these are my Muslim brothers. He's obviously showing a lot of anti-American sentiment at this point.
And he even makes, you know, he also discusses the Jewish religion. Well, I guess I used the word discuss for it, I guess, right? So he talks about that on his post. And some of the other strange things that he posts on his Facebook, right? He actually posts that he's born in Jerusalem, Israel. I mean, he puts that out there.
We know it's not true.
Right. And he puts other weird things out there. You know, that he graduated from high school in 2011, yet he graduated from college in 2007.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah, he was acting very strange. You know, we talked about the fact that it would come out that he, before the incident, had been trying to convert several employees to the Muslim religion. Apparently, after the event or the incident, he told law enforcement officials that he had been spending a lot of time watching videos of beheadings online before the incident occurred. He's watched, you know, what type of videos show beheadings. You know, he's watching ISIL or ISIS type videos. That's what I read. And that was big. You remember that before.
Because at that time, I think there were two American, I don't know if they were journalists or.
Yeah. And they actually, you could view them.
Right. On
YouTube.
If
you could stomach it. Yeah. You could view them on YouTube. And apparently he was, and I don't want to say cheering on. He might have been cheering on.
Right.
From everything that I read.
So the FBI is brought in.
Yes.
To help determine, is this a race crime? Is it just a crime?
A terrorist?
Is it a terrorist crime?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Because I don't think they were sure at this point. And I'm not sure if it wasn't a combination of all of it. I think it has elements of racial motivation. I think it has elements of terroristic motivation.
Right. I don't think he came back
religious
as a terrorist. I don't think he did. I think there's a workplace violence. I think because he made the comments, I think it was probably more racial that he was upset with these two women and this HR person that he almost lost his job. I think he took some of the Islamic terrorism methods that he learned and utilize those.
Well, yeah, I get what you're saying. I think the reason for what happened was not because he wanted to be a terrorist. I don't believe that. I think it was revenge.
Right.
He was upset. But the fact that he had been watching these videos of, you know, ISIS beheadings and the fact that he beheads Colleen Hufford.
Right.
You know, it just made for a huge national media story. And, you know, they were interviewing people at the mosque that he attended, and it was confirmed that he had started, or he had begun worshiping at one of the mosques there in Oklahoma City in May. They said he wasn't very outgoing. People described his behavior as odd and said that he was a little weird, but that his behavior didn't really raise any red flags. I guess Nolan had attended services where this is what the director of the Islamic Society of Greater Oklahoma City said, was that Nolan attended services where sermons were delivered against beheadings, like those committed by ISIS militants, and that Nolan's actions did not reflect the beliefs of Islam.
And that was from the Saeed Muhammad?
Was Saeed Muhammad. So I did find an interview online that I want to play. And this is from a person that stated that they attended.
Contradicts the statement,
right? It does contradict it a little bit. But this person states that they attended that same mosque with Alton Nolan.
I observed the teachings of Islam. It took 2 years to learn what I know about Islam today. To the public, the mosque will not promote terrorism or any kind of radical acts. But when they're among friends and congregants only, they will promote the true teachings of Islam, which include the offer to non-Muslims, the choice rather, that you must convert, live under Islamic rule, or be fought against. Jihad fi sabilillah, jihad for the sake of Allah. When I was attending the mosque, I was specifically told, for example, concerning suicide bombings in Israel, that we do support these acts because, as it was told to me, this is the only weapon the Palestinians have, but do not mention this to the media because they would not understand. The only time that beheadings were discussed was in the means of which you confront the infidel, as it is related to in the Quran, that when you meet the unbelievers, you should smite at their necks.
Contradicts a little bit. Now, again, I don't know how accurate this is. I don't know if this person really attended the mosque or not, but this was a credible news outlet that this was on. I didn't just pull this like a rant from somebody. This was an actual interview,
right,
from a credible news show. But the one thing that I took away from it was the fact that he stated in the Quran, it talks about, you know, the infidels and smiting at their necks. And I think that's where a lot of that, the beheading and that kind of behavior comes from, that interpretation, I guess.
Right.
That's the only thing
I think that's why there was so much argument on many sides, you know, with the FBI, with the prosecution, with the attorney general's office, with other agencies. Some thought it was radical Islam.
Yeah, radicalization, I think.
Radicalization, terrorism style. Others thought it was racially motivated. Some just said, hey, it was just a workplace violence, you know, action.
And even if it was, and I think this is where we see a lot of issues when you talk about religion, because you're talking about one individual that did something, and you have to be very careful of painting with a broad brush all of the people that practice that religion. And sometimes the media doesn't do a great job of that. You know, I want to make sure that we don't do that. We're not painting.
Oh no, not at all.
Muslims in a bad light whatsoever.
There's
simply given the, you know, telling the story as it unfolded.
Yeah, but radicals in every facet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can look at every race, religion, every segment of the population, and you have certain people out of every one of those segments that the ability to do something bad.
I mean, a clear example is we're in Oklahoma here. So we have the Oklahoma bombing, which was radical, but it wasn't Islam. It was radical, you know, a Christian radical that, you know, blew up the FBI building.
Yeah. Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
Right.
Back in, I forget the year now, but
it's been a long time ago.
Yeah. But, you know, there was a radical extremist on the other side of the fence. So, you know, they look at this case, and I think ultimately they come down to what, Mike? That it's not terrorism.
And I don't think it was. I don't know what you think, and really what we think doesn't matter a whole
hell of a lot. I think they got it right. I don't think it was an act of terrorism.
I think it was a series of events. The suspension. Now, I won't say that some of the radicalization may not have played into it. I mean, if this guy's watching the beheading videos and he's starting to look at Osama bin Laden and other ISIS commanders as what's the word I want to use is.
Oh, I get
idols. I mean, has to play some part in it, but I'm not sure that Alton Nolan would have gone out and done something.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the motivating factor that got him there.
Right.
Once he was there, I don't know if that kind of took over at that point then. I don't think that was the motivation. I think when he was there, I know that, you know, even Tracy makes the mention that when he went to run towards her, you know, he does say something in Arabic.
Yeah, but you're right about that.
But she doesn't remember what it was. But that's not the motivation behind the crime was the fact that he wanted to go there and take care of the people that turned him in.
Revenge.
For revenge.
Yeah, I think the motivation was revenge. But when he gets there, he doesn't just stab Colleen Hufford.
No, he uses methods that he's learned from watching online videos.
Right. Now, do you call that a terror? I don't call that a terrorist attack.
No.
It's just the method that he used. Right. But, I mean, it's heinous nonetheless.
So. Absolutely it is.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about what ultimately happened. You know, Alton Nolan is charged with murder and five other felony counts. You know, this is where things start to get This is where things get, you know, weird in a different way, because now he's in the judicial system. He's already, you know, he's in jail and they're trying to prosecute him and he wants to plead guilty, but the judge doesn't let him plead guilty because he's just not, the judge, from what I read, is not sure that Alton Nolan fully understands the consequences of his guilty plea.
And I think she also wanted to be sure, she wanted to make sure she took the cautious route, so when the verdict was rendered, that there was no chance for him to have a retrial. She didn't want to put Colleen's family and Tracy through something like that again.
Yeah.
So I think, she says she was erring on caution to make sure that there's going to be no future retrial.
So the strange part about this is it's still going on. I mean, this has not been resolved. Obviously, he's in custody. As of, I think it was August 2016, the psychologist and the lawyers were still going back and forth and arguing about his mental state and whether, you know, he was fully competent to stand trial. A couple of things that I read were, you know, that Nolan had refused to cooperate with his attorneys because he kind of thought that they were part of some big conspiracy along with the judge to do him in, which I don't know how they could be. He's already done in. He did himself in. He wants to plead guilty, but I read that he wasn't a very good defendant in the fact that he wasn't willing to work with his defense attorneys. The defense, you know, they have to mount defense, obviously, in every case. That they tried to frame it as though their client was mentally incompetent. And then on the other side, prosecutors are saying, no, he's difficult to deal with, but he's definitely competent. You know, I think the prosecution believed that he was competent from the get-go.
And they're going for the death penalty, right? On this one?
I
kind of thought they were going for the death penalty.
I don't know why they wouldn't. This should be a case that would warrant the death penalty.
I would think so.
Right now, there's really nothing going on until the judge is satisfied that his mental state is such that he fully understands what he's doing by entering this guilty plea. You know, from what I read, the prosecution basically thinks that as soon as it comes back that he's competent, the judge is going to accept a guilty plea, and then they're going to move forward with the sentencing.
I just think it's crazy that it's taken this long to get to that point.
I did too, and I actually read a quote from this guy named Garvin Isaacs. He's a defense attorney, and he's actually the president of the Oklahoma Bar Association. So, you know, obviously he's a well-respected attorney in Oklahoma. And he said it's very, very unusual for a judge to reject a guilty plea in a case. But he goes on to say, in this case, he believes that what the judge did was right, and that a reexamination of Alton Nolan's mental state is worth it. Worth taking the time, I guess, to extend the time frame to make sure,
right,
that
so no verdict gets overturned.
Yes. That's basically what you said. I just went in a much longer fashion.
Said it better.
in a different way. And I don't know if you read anything else, Gibby, but as far as I could find out, I mean, there's really no timetable.
No, we're just going to have to end. You know, follow back up with it and give an update, you know, if anything ever develops from it.
Yeah, because I couldn't even find where his next when his next competency evaluation was due.
Right.
And obviously everything moving forward hinges on that. But yeah, I agree. We can stick an update on the end of a future episode.
Right.
We kind of keep an eye on it. So Gibby, you got anything else?
No, I think this was interesting, and with a little bit of what's the word I want to use? A little bit of with the difference if it's a racial, if it's a workplace, if it's terrorism. It had a little spin on it, you know.
Yeah, it's a different type of case for us, right?
Right.
It's one murder, and then attacking somebody else, but and those things are bad.
Yep.
But what I think drew me into the case was all these ancillary things, around it, where you have him getting in trouble and battering this police woman. I really found that interesting.
Right. Just seems like a bad kid, bad young man.
Oh, he's a bad guy.
With rage issues.
I think that's a given. But
right.
when you've got this police officer that is looking back at 2010 saying, yeah, you know, I had a right to shoot this guy because we were struggling and he was, you know,
oh, I'm sure she shouldn't feel any guilt, but she probably feels like maybe I should have shot him. And, you know, these two people would be, Colleen would be alive and Tracy would not be traumatized for the rest of her life.
Know if that the police woman ever has come out and said that, but it wouldn't surprise me that in moments alone with other people, she would say that,
right.
You know, I should have shot this individual. And if I would have, then none of this would happen. Like we talked, like you talked about, the other interesting piece is really the race versus religion versus revenge, and examining that and taking a look and seeing which one is it. I think we have it right.
Right. So I'm curious with the listeners, and maybe they're let us know either on your Facebook or your Instagram or your Twitter. How do you like these cases? You know, we do the big ones, right? We do some of these more well-known ones, but these ones that are lesser known but interesting, you know, do they like them? I think I'd like to hear that feedback. And along with that, I'd love some feedback on what they think was the motivation behind this terrible murder.
Yeah, you and I talk about it all the time. We love the interaction with the listeners, and we kind of said it from the beginning, right? We talked about trying to do a mix of, we're going to do the big ones, but you can't rush through all the big ones. You can't do Bundy, Gacy, Dahmer back to back to back.
Right. It's
and a lot of people have said they, you know, they enjoy some of these ones that they've never heard of, or maybe they kind of remember them, but they don't know the details. And then some people really like what I always call the big timers. And we're going to do all of them. Don't worry about that. You know, we're going to do Ed Gein, and we're going to do John Wayne Gacy. And because we're going to do Zodiac. You know, we're going to do Zodiac because that's my all time favorite.
That's probably a 5-parter.
But I don't know how many that'll take. In between, you know, we try to find some of these cases that are interesting and less well known. But I like your idea, Mike. You know, let us know. Because we're only here to do, to give the audience what they want.
Right.
Now we can't please everybody all the time. And we've found that out pretty quickly.
Right.
There's some people that like some of the things that we do and some don't like some of the other things that we do.
But that's all right. You know, at least they tell us.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So anyway, let's wrap up this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You know, as always, stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.